Frenetic inspiration.
Jim Freund for the interstitial interludes and the insight about the reality of tornadoes in New York City. Every caller, what's that, Jim?
Four people killed today.
Whereabouts?
In Connecticut and Massachusetts.
Uh-huh.
In tornadoes. Yeah. Serious tornadoes.
Okay.
It did happen.
Well, here's to God bless the souls lost today. Thank you, Jim. Jim Freund is about to be here with Hour of the Wolf. He knows more than a little bit. Probably more than me. Because he ain't it. I'm the new kid on the block.
There you go. You're the new
I'm VAI.
You only came here in
78. Right around the turn there.
Yeah.
Well, you're the reason why.
You say that.
It was the Neil Adams poster.
Neil Adams poster.
Yeah, one of your premiums. All right.
Still have it? Do you have any idea what that sucker is worth today?
I didn't want to end the show crying, Jim.
Oh, yeah. I know.
The vagaries of here and there.
I don't
know. But, you know, its real meaning is permanent, because here we are. Well, this is my exeunt, Michael Jackson, Earth Song. You guys have been beautiful. And this is Freeform Radio on WBAI Pacific Radio in New York. I'm R. Knight, R-K-N-I-G-H-T at WBAI.org. And now you're about to have not only your soul, but your cranium rocked with the wit and wisdom of Jim Freund with Hour of the Wolf coming up momentarily. Thank you for listening. See you next week. Oh, Moogie Klingman at Banjo Jim's tonight at 9 o'clock. Be there or be square. Good night. I'm Robert Knight.
Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. This is a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. This morning, a rebroadcast of an interview done last October with dark fantasy writer Kathy Kojan. Stay tuned. Good morning. Okay. Well, it feels like ages and ages since I've been here, even though during the thon I was on twice. But, it just felt very different, especially with the fundraising and all these various things going on. Didn't have a show proper in there. And so on the one hand, it was vacation and I'm feeling like I've been away and I'm coming back. On the other hand, well, it was just a little bit otherworldly. But I guess for a science fiction show, that is appropriate. Okay, before we get started, announcements. One needs to make announcements. Okay, first of all, next Tuesday, June 7th. An event that I produce every month. The New York Review of Science Fiction Readings will be taking place. And we have a grand double feature for you, two of the best writers around, Gregory Frost and Michael Swanwick. I'll read you their bios. Greg Frost is a writer of fantasy, science fiction, and thrillers. He's the author of the acclaimed duology Shadowbridge and Lord Tophet, called one of the few must-read fantasies of the year by the Fantasy Book Critic and voted one of the best fantasy novels of the year by the American Library Association. Starred View and PW, and his short story collection, Attack of the Jazz Giants and Other Stories, wonderful book. I'll just say a wonderful book. Why do I have to quote other people and what they said about it? I'll tell you, it's a wonderful book. Greg Frost has been a finalist for the James Tiptree Award, the Nebula Award, the Theodore Sturgeon Memorial Award, the World Fantasy Award, Hugo Award, and the International Horror Guild Award. He is a current fiction writing workshop director at Swarthmore College in, Swarthmore, Pennsylvania. And, you see, this thing has a Pennsylvanian theme to it because the other person, who, by the way, will be a guest here in 2 weeks, he'll be live on this program, is Michael Swanwick. And Michael is one of the most acclaimed science fiction and fantasy writers of his generation. He has received Hugo Awards for short fiction, an unprecedented 5 times in 6 years. His novel Stations of the Tide was honored with Nebula Award and was nominated for the Hugo and Arthur C. Clarke Awards. The Edge of the World received the Theodore Sturgeon Memorial Award and was nominated for both the Hugo and World Fantasy Award. Radio Waves got the World Fantasy Award. His stories are frequently reprinted in the Best of the Year anthologies and have been translated and published throughout the world. Actually, I just got the Best Horror of the Year anthology came in the mail, and both Gregory Frost and Michael Swanwick are represented in there. Let's see. Blah, blah, blah. He's the author of Griffin's Egg, In the Drift, Stations of the Tide, Vacuum Flowers, The Iron Dragon's Daughter, and its sequel, The Dragons of Babel. His latest novel, Dancing with Bears, continues the adventures of far future confidence tricksters Darger and Surplus. And that just came out. In fact, I just got my copy in the mail. And those are fun. Those are, you know, con artist stories set in the far future. What's not to like? You know, I love con artist stories to begin with, and set it in the future and put in the wit of Michael Swanwick, and that's fine. And he and Greg Frost, the other reader for that, have actually been recording podcasts of Darger and Surplus stories. So that will be something that we will have on the program in 2 weeks. So, details? Details. Yes, Tuesday, June 7th. That's this coming Tuesday. The admission is free. We will hassle you for a donation at the door, but, well, we won't really hassle you. We will ask if you can afford it. If you can't afford it, doesn't matter. It's free. Come on in. I am the producer and the one asking for the money. What the money goes to, by the way, is it buys dinner and drinks for the readers. Now, I know that Swanwick does martinis. So, yeah, we're going to ask you for donations at the door. And, yes, by the way, you are invited to come out with us after the reading. That's a part of the, well, the whole event. So, again, Tuesday, June 7th. Admission free, suggest a donation. Where? Oh! Details, details. The Soho Gallery for Digital Art. That is 138 Sullivan Street. 138 Sullivan Street, which is between Houston and Prince Street. So it's actually pretty easy to get to. And for more information, go to my website, ourwolf.com, H-O-U-R-W-O-L-F. And you'll see a link there. It's a very old-looking website. I'm working on sprucing it up. What's the link there? The New York Review of Science Fiction Readings. And you click on that, and there's interactive maps and all of that type of stuff. So I hope to see you there next Tuesday. Do say hello. I'll be hosting, so you'll know who I am. And that's it. Of all things, at our last reading, by the way, WBAI station manager showed up. I was so thrilled. I thought that was just so cool. That was a first for me, that somebody, you know, actually, you know, in authority, in power, and he seemed to have a good time, too. What do you know? You should show up and have a good time as well. Okay, there are some book signings and things happening also this week, or next week, I should say. One for the Bordertown book, the new Bordertown book. I'm thrilled about that. Welcome to Bordertown. And also one for Ellen Datlow's new anthology called Teeth. And I will get the information on this and tell you a little later. But it is thanks to Datlow that last October I got to meet Kathy Koja. She was here for, there's the other reading series. I produced the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, and Matt Kressel and Ellen Datlow produce the KGB Fantastic Fiction series. And Kathy read there last October, and a few hours before that reading, she was here in WBAI's studio, and I got to speak with her, and that was on at 5 a.m. in early October, and it was at just the point where I actually thought Hour of the Wolf was canceled. That was before I was moved into this time slot, and at that point, I did not know where I was going to go. So there was sort of a rushed, truncated version of this. And this will be truncated only insofar as I cannot play. She read later that night. She read, you know, for half an hour, and I cannot broadcast that because, well, we don't have the time for it. But we do have time to hear the interview itself and talk about her fabulous new book that came out at that time. And I thought, why not play it here? It's a completely different audience and no less interesting. But before I do that, let's see. Yes, next week, Lawrence Watt Evans, one of the fine writers in science fiction, will be here. The week after that, Marianne Porter and her husband, Michael Swanwick. And I'm going to record an interview with one and do a live interview with the other. Haven't figured out the order yet. But they'll be here in the studio anyway. And June and July are shaping up to be wonderful months on this program, if I'm looking at my schedule correctly. So just be sure to stay tuned, check the website, check my Twitter announcement. Probably the best thing to do is to follow my Twitter announcements or friend me on Facebook or something like that. In either case, I am Jim Freund, J-I-M-F-R-E-U-N-D. Just look that up on Twitter and you will find me. And similarly on Facebook. Okay, so enough live talking. Let's go to some recorded talking. Today is November 17th, and it's about 4 o'clock in the afternoon here
at the month
studios of WBAI. And with me is Kathy Koja. And say hello.
Hello.
Oh, there we go. Okay, good. So I've got a good level.
Okay.
And you see, I told you, it's really very free form, very loose.
Maybe. Okay.
I think there's probably a good percentage of listeners out there who already know your name.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah. You see how prepared I am? I don't have a blessed thing in front of me other than the knowledge of some fabulous literature, dark and not as dark, adult and not as adult, and bestseller and now small press.
Yes.
So how would you describe yourself to somebody who doesn't know your oeuvre?
Myself or my work?
Yes.
Yes to both?
Mm-hmm.
I would not describe myself. I would describe my work as I try to follow my nose. I try to follow what interests me. I try to follow what excites me, what confounds me, what speaks to me, and I hope by doing that kind of work, whether it is later sold as YA or whether it's sold as historical fiction or horror or whatever, it will be a recognizable voice that people who have known me in one arena. It's like meeting someone at a different party. You're like, oh, I saw you at such and such. Oh, you're here now. Oh, fun. And hopefully if people who have liked things that I've done in the past will like things that I do in the future, because I like to try new things. I like to go to different parties all the time.
That's wonderful. And it's very, very important for people who are constantly pigeonholing genres.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a problem across the board in any kind of writing, in any kind of music. I mean, we're a classifying species. And part of us likes to, what is that? You know, I need to know what that is because that berry might kill me. So I need to know the difference between the red berry and the slightly red berry, because one of them gave me the galloping trots and one is super delicious. So I learned to classify as a species. But then when I come to creative berries, let's say, the classification maybe is not so useful. And we all do it, too. It's like, oh, I went to see such and such. What was that about? You know. Okay, or what is that? Oh, I'm reading a mystery. I'm reading this. I'm reading that. Mm-hmm. Okay. But I don't know that it helps us other than when we are shelving things in, you know, a virtual bookstore, I don't know how much classification helps us. Because the things that you love the most, can you classify them? I can't. Except for coffee, you know.
I can say I love fruit. I might prefer citrus over, I don't know what a banana is. But
nobody knows what a banana
is. You know,
See, thereby hangs the problem. See?
Exactly, exactly. So, therefore, you can't say, well, I don't care for berries, so you won't try blank. I used to make this mistake in horror. I don't like horror, which is to say I don't care to read about, oh, dismemberments and visceral gore. But I do like something that creeps me out.
Like Shirley Jackson.
Oh, God. Well, I mean,
she's the best. I love Shirley Jackson.
She is probably the top. She's probably the best all-time horror writer in... And yet, you know, there are people in, you know, the highbrow circles, less true today, but 20 years ago, would never have permitted... Yeah, no, Shirley Jackson isn't horror. She writes literature.
Right, of course.
You know, yeah, well, you know, like The Haunting of Hill House or... The lottery.
Well, even her family stories, even Raising Demons, are incredibly disquieting. There are moments in those stories where, you know, the true Shirley is in everything she does.
Yeah.
And that was a different genre for her, but she's still there. You can still...
Yeah, exactly.
Everything that's her is present in that writing as well.
And I have done interviews with people who were, you know, strictly genre for a while or even strictly fantasy works and then tried their first science fiction or whatever, or their first gasp mainstream, whatever that means. And, you know, I'll have them on Hour of the Wolf and they'll say, but it's not science fiction. It's like, yeah, but you wrote it, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, so it counts.
Yeah. And I've had any number of shows, any number of guests, readers, people at the reading series. In fact, you're going to be reading at the KGB series tonight. And Dadlow had on this fellow, oh, darn, I'm not remembering his name, but he's editor of Real Simple magazine, of all things. I mean, this is a major magazine.
Jim Baker was his name.
And he read a story that was utterly superb. And this is not a guy known for his fiction.
Right.
And only after listening to it for the second or third time, since I record them and have the luxury of doing that, and after having had him on my show, Jim Baker, his name is Jim Baker.
Okay, right.
And after having had him read the story on the show and take phone calls and all that, somebody called and said, well, that's not science fiction or fantasy at all, is it? And we both thought about it. We both thought about it at that point. Said, yep, guess not. Next call.
Right, and?
But there is one interesting thing. And that is that that story appealed to that audience. It may not have appealed to people who were looking for a Western or the next vampire book. Teen vampire book, of course. Or
is there any other kind?
Yeah, well, yes, actually. But that's another show. there are good ones.
No,
Hour of the Wolf is a vampire movie.
They're very good.
But
Dracula is one of the best books that I've ever read.
Yeah.
But yeah, and let's don't go there.
Yeah, let's not go there. But the point is that it was interesting for Dadlow to take that story, to take that writer, and put him into that oeuvre, I don't want to say genre, put him in front of that audience. And I picked up on her cue and put him in front of the same audience, and it was fabulous. And the fact that these were people who normally read speculative fiction.
But, you know, can I go out on a limb here?
Please.
A tiny limb. Just a twig, really. I have sometimes found that among people who think of themselves as adventurous, I think we all have comfort zones, and I think we all have a long way to go with what we are willing to accept, especially if we think of ourselves as adventurous, especially if we think of ourselves as, how do I say this? If you feel that you're already at a frontier, you might not notice that there's a greater frontier beyond you. And there's always more to discover. There's always more to read. There's always more to know. And you're always being pushed intellectually, emotionally. There are always going to be writers and artists and musicians, composers, people who hit your buttons. And those are the people that you should be paying attention to because they're stretching you and they're pulling you. And especially with people who work in an imaginative genre, let's say, you always need to be reading as widely as possible. Anything that appeals to you, things that put you off, all those things are little signals from the universe saying, come this way, come down this path, see what happens. You know, you might be hit over the head, you might find the chocolate fairy, you know, you might find the berry that is a banana, whatever, whatever.
It's what mythologists would call into the woods.
That's right. That's right. And that's where you will take the path. That's what I try to do, you know, in my own way with the fiction that I choose to write. Mm-hmm. I don't ever decide beforehand. I had no idea I was going to write Under the Poppy. None whatsoever. It is not a plan. I do not plan.
And Under the Poppy, published by Small Beer Press.
Yes.
We have to thank Gavin Grant for... husbanding this particular meeting?
So. Gavin and Kelly are the best. I have enjoyed working with them so much on this. And if this is the future of publishing, count me in.
Yeah.
Because they are just what I felt so strongly working with them, and I just could not thank them enough, is the feeling that they were shepherds of the project. They were as
shepherds.
Invested in it as much as I was. And as happy about it. They had the high highs, the low lows, the creamy middle. You know, it meant a lot to them. You do not feel like you're just someone who walked in the door and can walk back out. Doing a book with them has just been a delight.
Now, traditionally, you've been with major hardback and paperback publishers.
My last 7 books were FSG.
Mm-hmm. For Strauss Giroux, is that how they... And, you know, that's a big deal. And were the paperbacks all... No, the paperbacks were in different houses, right?
Yeah, all different houses. And the great thing about... I mean, FSG was another kind of really... No, it was a different kind of publishing and a different approach and very satisfying in a different way.
Would say the normal outside... observer, you're a best-selling writer. And to go from a huge house like FSG to SBP, and it really is Small Beer Press. I mean, what Small Beer Press does is huge.
It is.
But they have a staff of, what, 3?
Jedediah,
Kelly, and Gavin.
But what makes the...
Jedediah Berry, a great writer himself.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, what makes it interesting to look at from the outside and maybe more understandable on the inside is that what publishing was always supposed to be about was finding work that moves or enrages or inspires or gets an editor, you know, gets the editorial knickers in a twist, say. And then that editor then presents that work in the best, most accessible way possible to an audience that he or she feels will enjoy, understand, appreciate, want it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's what publishing is supposed to be. And that's, I think, what Gavin and Kelly do so brilliantly. They know what they like. They know what people who are like them like. They know who their readers are.
Mm-hmm.
And they choose books that will appeal to those readers.
But what you're doing is the equivalent of, like, you know, a big rock star going to an indie label.
Well, I'll tell you, being on Wall Street today, this is my first visit to Wall Street ever, okay? And
you live in Detroit.
I live in Detroit, and I'm a proud native Detroiter. And this is my first visit to Wall Street. I've never been this far down before.
Uh-huh.
And it's an extremely different vibe, okay? And maybe that is the best way that I can explain
New York has many vibes. Wall Street is a very specific one.
Yeah, it is.
Although even then, Wall Street has its own. You have to. We're three blocks from the Seaport.
Mm.
You know, that's a very different atmosphere.
It's like being underwater here. It's very odd. Odd indeed.
But, you know, it depends on which way you go. If you go west, you're at Wall Street. If you keep going west, you're at Trinity Church. If you go just three blocks north, you're at South Street Seaport with a fabulous feeling.
But because of the feeling of what I'm trying to get at, I guess, is that commerce is its own affair.
It really is.
Yes, we would all like, I'm sure Gavin and Kelly and I all want Under the Poppy to be as successful as it possibly can be. But that said, we none of us did this with commerce as the overriding goal.
Well, how did be that as it may? Again, that rock star metaphor, no analogy, that I used isn't out of place. And it is something that does happen, that there are a lot of people who say, I've had enough with, you know, the big labels, and I'm going to work with these people who have the true understanding of what music and art is supposed to be, and I'm going there. And it may not make the same money and may not be distributed in quite the same way, but...
And publishing is changing so much, too. The way that publishing worked 5 years ago is not going to be the way publishing works 5 years from now. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen.
As we're interviewing, I'm taking pictures of you with my phone, but I could also be reading your book with that same phone.
That's right.
I wouldn't care to, but I could.
But right, precisely. Things are changing so much that to have the focus on the work and to doing the work that you want to do, and then trying to figure out afterwards what is the best way to get this work out to the people who will like and understand it and, you know, be moved by it and be excited by it, that's what publishing is supposed to be. And that is what they do really well. That is what, you know, I hope everyone who feels an affinity for Under the Poppy would want to get a copy of it in whatever format and enjoy and into my world.
Absolutely. And one of your worlds.
One of my worlds.
Yeah.
But my favorite world right now.
Ah, okay. So let us discuss this world a little. Tell us about this world.
Under the Poppy takes place in a Victorian brothel. And that in itself is kind of the litmus test. If you think that's interesting and exciting, you know, you should read on. If not, then it's probably not the book for you.
That scores big points for me. The French brothels of the era, not so much. I got ruined for them by the movie Topsy Turvy. But
okay.
Yeah, because that was the one thing out of place in that otherwise wonderful film.
It's a great movie.
Yeah, well, it's one of my favorite. I'm a big GNS fan. But having said that, Victorian brothel, that's different. Stay on that side of the channel, and I'm with you.
And what I wanted to do in this world as I was making it up was be as true historically as the story demands. And that said, what I want people to have, what I would hope for, what I strove for when I was writing the book, is to give them the experience of attending this brothel, being with these people, watching the puppet shows, being in the midst of the war, smelling the smells, feeling the grit. You know, I wanted to make it as real as I possibly could for readers.
Speaking of real as you possibly can, this is WBAI New York.
And in doing so, I picked and chose what historical tidbits I wanted to use. Mm-hmm. And so please do not read it if you want an authentic map to everything that ever happened in Victorian brothels, because that's not what it's about. What it is about is desire. It's about theater. It's about artifice. And it's first and foremost a love story. And I don't know that I have written anything quite as overtly romantic as this story.
Yeah, it really does come across in, well, it's actually a very sweet book in its way.
It is very sweet. I wanted it to. That experience of being true to someone throughout, because the men in this book, Rupert and Istvan, are the characters that we meet and follow throughout the entire course of the book. And to have a love that begins almost in pretty much in childhood and that continues through very heavy weather indeed, through wars and through betrayals and through unhappiness and through happiness and through pleasure and through all the gifts that life can bring you, to stay true to this one person is not an easy thing. And it is very human to feel the disruptions and the pains and to be parted by them, and that these men stay together. I'm giving nothing away here, okay?
Right. No spoilers.
No spoilers, but to be able to stay together throughout a lifetime is a lifetime's work.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would hope that readers would feel when they read this book is, you know, the power of that kind of love.
Yeah, and I think it came through for me.
That's good. I'm
at
glad.
At any rate, I do have to say, and it was very interesting because the first part of what you were saying there was, yes, it had your voice, but it was very, very different.
Mm. What did you find that was different? What was different for you?
Less dark. In its way, it was sweeter. I don't think of your stories necessarily as being sweet. Some of them are exceedingly, I didn't say excessively, exceedingly dark.
Mm.
It's not really horror.
Oh, God, no.
But a lot of what you've written can be described as horror. I didn't finish what I was saying earlier, that I said that I didn't like horror, and then you mentioned Shirley Jackson, and I had to gush.
Mm.
But I have discovered that there's a lot of horror that I love. I just didn't know it.
Well, right, and again, it comes down to classification. Someone like Angela Carter has written some extremely dark work, really beautiful work.
And I really like her stuff. Yeah.
I like her stuff a lot, too. I think she's fantastic. One of the reviews of Under the Poppy talked about the book being like Angela Carter and Sarah Waters playing exquisite corpse in a brothel. And I thought, oh, God, this is fantastic. I just love that. I love that. Sarah Waters, in fact, was someone I had not read previous to writing this book.
See, I'm not familiar with her.
The book of hers that a lot of people know is Tipping the Velvet. And it also
I have heard of that.
Tipping the Velvet, okay. Affinity, and Fingersmith are her Victorian novels.
Okay.
And I knew they existed,
but
I deliberately did not read them because I was wanting to work on this. And I don't read fiction when I'm writing fiction because I tend to prefer strong voices. And I need to keep the things very separate. So that sensibility in some ways could be considered a dark one. And what is interesting about that period of history for me as, you know, a total layperson and coming to it again following my nose is that there seemed to be this tension between we are men of science and we are carrying our tears when we cry for someone who's died in a little bottle in a tear bottle. Okay,
mm-hmm.
We wear bracelets made out of the hair of the dead, okay? So it's like juju magic, and it's like we are men of science, and everything can be solved by science. And so there was this very creative tension, and that made it an interesting period for me as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the puppets was a whole nother, because the Istvan, one of our viewpoint characters, one of our main characters, is a puppeteer, and he and Rupert met and bonded and began doing puppet shows as children and as young men before they are driven apart by all sorts of forces, yes.
Yeah.
And the chance to do the puppetry research was a lot of fun. A book that I recommend to all and sundry, even if you have like just a glancing interest in puppeteering or the puppet as a performing object, is Eileen Blumenthal's Puppets of World History. And some people might know Eileen Blumenthal through her work with Julie Taymor.
Ah, okay.
And her book is so brilliantly organized because it is not by, it's not chronological, it's not by here are marionettes, here are rod puppets, here is this, here is that. It's organized by subject. It's like by puppets and sex, puppets and violence, puppets and politics. And that was really brilliant because it gave me the kind of introduction that I needed, because the puppets in this story are very much objects of the id. They are objects of pleasure. They are objects of war. They are objects of deception. And they are the ultimate actors. They can do and be anything. Mm. And for someone like István, who is so very cloven himself, they made a perfect, you know, accomplice and foil. And they were a lot of fun to work with, just a great deal of fun, you know, as fictional constructs. I don't know that you could get any more fictional than pretend people who are pretending to be people.
Yeah, that's avatars of avatars and all that. And, of course, the puppets and who's controlling them. This is always such a major metaphor in fiction, mostly always, almost always dark fiction, even when it's not supernatural or speculative fiction.
Even the original Pinocchio is a very dark story.
Oh,
indeed.
Exceedingly so. Exceedingly so. We did a radio production of Pinocchio some many years ago, as it was written.
Right.
And yeah, no, that's a lovely dark story. And oh, you're going to have to come to New York in April to see Peter
War
and
Horse?
Wendy.
Oh, I thought you were going to say War Horse. That's going to be amazing.
That's yes, it is. But Peter and Wendy, I've already seen. This is like the third time it's being done. This is the Mabu Mines.
Yeah.
And they have one woman who does all the voices, from Mr. Darling to Wendy to Peter and all that. But the and she sort of acts out Wendy. She is Wendy. There is no icon of Wendy on the stage. But they're, first of all, they're doing the actual J.M. Barrie.
Mm, that's good.
Yeah, verbatim.
Right.
So, edited down a little to fit into 2 hours. But it is what he wrote. Not the play Peter Pan, but the novel.
But the actual,
the novelette,
right.
Peter and Wendy, which is even darker than the play Peter Pan. And Peter is not nice.
No, he isn't.
And
he's very puckish in that sense. I mean, in the original sense.
Very,
Puck
yes.
was not a nice boy either.
No, not at all. Yeah, I mean, I'd say he's even darker than Robin Goodfellow. He does nasty things.
And you can't get a hold of those characters. You can't figure them out. You can't necessarily anticipate what they will do next.
Absolutely
because
not. You can't anticipate actually where that novel, if you read the original, The Little White Bird, that he wrote before Peter and Wendy. You know, first you're talking about a lost baby in Kensington Garden, the next thing it's an 8-year-old, and the next thing we're back to being 3.
And that's why the puppet as a character is so fun to work with and so fun to manipulate fictionally, because you can never get a grasp on them. They are completely real and not real at all.
And in that production of Peter, well, bear with us. That was embarrassing. It's what happens sometimes when you play stuff from the cloud, as it were. Okay, so I've been fooling around with technologies. I should just be listening instead. I am sorry, Kathy. I'm sorry, listeners. I will find approximately where we were, and we will resume. By the way, that production of Peter and Wendy just ended, and I did go to see it for the third time, 3 productions, 3 times, and it remains totally magical. But now let's find where we were and resume with the conversation with Kathy Koje.
Fiction, as does the brothel, because that is an environment completely of created desire. It's not real. Everyone knows it's not real. But while it's happening, it feels very real indeed, same as theater.
And this brings up my next question for you. Oh, I have to say it. You can't.
Pretty much, yes. Please do.
Okay. Why haven't you written for the theater, or have you, and I'm not aware of it?
It is nice that you say that. In fact, I have adapted Under the Poppy for a stage presentation.
I didn't know this.
Yes, I'm very excited. I have the script in my bag, as a matter of fact. I have it with me. Yes, and it was a very different kind of writing. It was very, it called on different muscles because it is not fiction in that sense. It is not, there are words meant to be spoken. There were parts of the book, and this the stage presentation is only the first half of the book.
Right.
Because it had to be, because I had to stop somewhere. And that was, because otherwise, I mean, then it turns into GATS or something, you know, and it's like super long. And I wanted to keep that, I wanted to keep the focus of the stage presentation on the brothel landscape. And what we're working on now is an immersive stage presentation. Are you familiar with Punch Drunk? They're in the UK. And Punch Drunk.
No, I've heard the name.
They were here last year. Well, not here in New York. They were in Boston for a performance of a mashup of Hitchcock's Rebecca and Macbeth called Sleep No More. And it was out in Brookline, Mass. And it was just, it was an amazing production. My collaborator, Diane Cechlich, and I came to Boston to see this show because we were already developing Under the Poppy and we wanted to experience an immersive show, the way a piece of fiction is supposed to suck you in and keep you there and hold you in that surface tension of the world. That's what we want to do with the show.
Mm-hmm.
And to recreate the atmosphere of the brothel, to recreate that same feeling of grit and tension and pleasure and anticipation for people when they come in and when they sit down and when they become, you know, part of our universe. And so watching that immersive show take shape and come to life was kind of a primer for us on how it is done. So that's what we're wanting to do with the show.
And it's real theater, because theater is that very, very special thing where if you do it right, the proscenium melts.
Right, right, right. And because this is an immersive show in the sense of people coming into the landscape, they will be we're wanting to do it with cabaret seating. We will want people to be entering the world of the Poppy. They will not be watching it on stage. They will be part of it. It will be happening around them. And so that is what we hope to do, to duplicate in a different medium the experience of Under the Poppy.
Fabulous.
That's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
It lends itself so perfectly. But that's when I was reading the book, I had a different kind of medium in mind. But that this is me.
And what was that?
Well, duh. Radio drama.
Oh,
you can be more immersive than theater. It is possible. Because in radio drama, when you close your eyes,
right, you're there. You are there.
There. And the sounds are around you. Mm-hmm. And the images are even better.
Because you're creating, you're a partner in creation, which is, that is closer in that respect to fiction for sure, because you're bringing your own images, your own energy, your own, that's why you needn't over-describe things in fiction, because your readers will dress their own sets far better than you ever could.
Exactly.
Their own personal sets and their own personal touchstones and the smells and the things they like to look at and the things they don't like to look at, and all these things will be there available to them in a way that they can't be for you as a writer. Obviously, you have your own set of whatever.
There are things that people can do in theater that will astound the, you know, that cannot be done on radio. Mm-hmm. But there are things that can be done on radio that cannot be done
any other way.
Any other way.
And, fiction, too.
Well, absolutely. And for me, fiction is number one best from the written word to the reader. That is the closest you can get in a communication from the author to the mind's eye.
Right.
Number two, it's the spoken word, whether it is read or acted. And I personally always prefer the author's voice. I'm singular in this. Most people want an actor to come and do. I like the author reading, as you're going to do tonight at KGB, and we're going to record. Number three, then, it's theater. Number three is theater, because you, if it's, when it's done right, when it is done right, it is, as you say, immersive, and the proscenium should melt away. And in the kind of production you're talking about, there's not even a proscenium.
Right. And it's meant to be, in that sense, a little bit threatening as well, and a little bit, maybe threatening is too strong a word, unsettling.
Challenging.
Challenging, for sure. And because there were people who went to see Sleep No More who did not enjoy the experience of being turned loose in a theater and basically made to create your own experience, they didn't like that. Although why you would still go, I can't imagine. You know what it is. But for whatever reason, if you were an adventurous theater goer, you know, it's the same as an adventurous reader. And the same way that I hope that people who enjoy my voice in, you know, my older fiction, in my stuff for, my YA stuff for readers who are slightly younger. And I hate to say it that way. I think any book is right for any reader to whom the book is speaking. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we can, you know, I have said a million times that to me The Velveteen Rabbit is one of the most dark and challenging pieces of fiction because it really
and
asks.
Thoroughly rereadable.
Oh, and the painful question. I mean, when the rabbit is saying, what is the use of becoming real if it all ends like this?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know that anyone has ever answered that.
There are all different levels. It's not the
Beatrix Potter. It's incredibly painful. Oh, God, it's incredibly painful. So
yeah, I still can, God help me, cry at Winnie the Pooh. At the very end, with the line, somewhere in a forest, a boy is playing with his bear. I mean, come on. And people are going to say, why are we listening to this guy? But I'm going to say, that makes me cry today at age 56.
Absolutely. Because it's true.
And it is that world. It is that place of imagination and loss and hope and love.
And it speaks to, if a piece of fiction is true, it's going to be true now. It's going to be true for you as a reader when you're 158. It's going to be true for any reader to whom it can speak. It won't be true for every reader because we don't all have the same receptors for fiction. But for those who have the receptors for a particular piece of fiction, it will always be true for those readers.
But what's interesting is how the receptors change through the years.
I don't know that they do.
Well, I don't know. I don't think that I saw some of the sad. I take that back. I knew Winnie the Pooh was sad when I was little, but I didn't have the experience. I didn't have the understanding of that loss until I got older.
And that's why when people talk to me about Under the Poppy and say, people who do know me primarily from my YA novels, and there were seven of them, and there are, you know, a lot of readers who just know me from that, and they'll say, oh, but, you know, do you think this is suitable for your younger readers? And gosh, it doesn't seem like it, and it's in a brothel, and da 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 da. You know, that said, what makes it a book for adults, as I air quote that, is that to me, it is about that, how do you stay true to something? And for young people, they are coming to those allegiances. They are coming to what is necessary to my life. And you're in the world choosing and discarding and accepting and taking in and letting go of things a lot when you're young. That's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
When you get older and you start saying, what is for me? This is my path. Okay. With whom will I walk? What is for me? What is for me? That, to me, is a somewhat more adult question than a young person's question. What do I retain? What am I going to keep? Understanding that life is finite. Understanding that one day I won't be here. What is important to me to keep?
Yeah.
And that is a lot of what Under the Poppy is about. Again, yeah. Is that you know, true love, literally. What is true love? I mean, and it plays itself out in many different aspects of the book. Istvan has a sister, Deka, and Deka's truth is not the same as his. Deka's beliefs are not the same as his. Deka's love is not the same as his. And, you know, how do you stay true in a sibling relationship? How do you stay true to, you know, himself as an artist and as a puppeteer? How does Rupert stay true to him in these changing circumstances? So those are the questions that are maybe more suitable for it. You know, but again, any book who speaks to you, if a book speaks to you, then it's a book for you. And I would be the last person to know, you know, who is appropriate.
And I don't know that the brothel, you know, there's nothing immoral in the reading of this book
I would say not.
No, there really isn't. And, you know, compared to what some of the stuff that passes as YA, much of which has overt sex in it.
And it isn't only that. I think what is the things that to me would be most disturbing or painful in this book are those ideas of betrayal, or are those ideas of hypocrisy when you get there's a character, a military character, the general,
oh, God,
and
yes.
the you know those
yes,
guys.
Yes. Oh God,
those guys are they're operating in a very different definition of what it means to be true or what truth is, and they are
their version of truth, yeah,
pretty much, and they're glad to inflict it on any and all, you know,
yes.
all comers, and that's a very different kind of truth.
Yeah.
And the bad guys...
It's a forced truth.
The bad guys never think they're bad. You know, the bad guys never...
Not when they're written well.
Yeah, well, right. They're not... Nobody gets up in the morning and says, well, I'm really going to lay waste to the world. You know, they get up in the morning and say, I'm going to go out and do the good things that I do every day. And it's
exactly.
a shame that people can't fall in line with that. And I guess I'll have to whip them until they do for their own good.
Mm.
So, yes, those were the characters. And that said... The characters who are in complete opposition to our heroes, these guys, again, are it's their version of the truth, and a lot of what that version is hypocrisy. There's a scene, I did some launch events last week in Detroit, and one of the things that I like to read, I don't know if I'll read it tonight, but it's a section of the book where there's been a very bawdy show involving a puppet with a horse's head, and he's anatomically correct in several ways. And he, the Chevalier, and he, there's a brothel show at Under the Poppy involving this puppet. And the mayor of the town is kind of a guy who just wants to go along and get along. And it's like, okay, now the army's in town and that's fine. And I'm going to get along with them and blah, blah, blah. So his attaché comes and protests on the mayor's behalf and says, this show was not, you know, the show was disturbing to the mayor, you know, in many ways. And Decca points out, well, you know, it wasn't a real horse. And this isn't really real. And the man takes it amiss. And so Rupert has to step in and kind of lay down the definition of what's real and what isn't and what matters and what doesn't. And perhaps the attaché's own conduct when he himself visits the brothel might be disturbing to some. But it's like, you know what, this is a world apart here, and I only bring up your conduct, sir, to point out that things happen here that it's not the real world. So don't get your panties in a twist.
Mm-hmm.
And so I read that for our events last week, and people respond to, people like to see hypocrisy brought to the surface. People like to see, especially when it's cloaked in morality. Especially when it's cloaked in, won't someone please think of the children? And I'm going to decide for you what I think you should read, see, look at, what kind of puppet can play on your stage. I feel that I have the right to decide that for you, and you don't. I mean, who can say that to a person? You know, that no. And if anything happens under the poppy, it is certainly not about hypocrisy, and it is certainly not about saying one thing is what it is not, even though they're all puppets acting these things out, and even though it's understood that the prostitutes of the establishment are not really in love with you. But we all know that, okay? Nobody, there's a line in the book where it talks about a character receiving what the poppy has always given, the illusion of granted desire. And that's what that is about, the illusion of granted desire. We all know it's an illusion, but we're all playing along with it for the, you know, 8 minutes or so that it's lasting. We all know. And we're all in on it. No one's lying to anybody else. It's not a lie. It's true.
Yeah.
Like theater, it's true. While it's happening, it's true.
Yeah, absolutely. And it transcends that. I can see this working beautifully as theater. And and it should have occurred to me while I was reading it, but you see... Given my life experience, I'm sorry, the first thing I thought is,
well,
radio.
That's pretty understandable, don't you think?
And it would be great as radio, wouldn't it? But you can't see the puppets on the
You
radio.
Can't see the puppets
Although,
on the radio.
You know, historically, Edgar Bergen did a radio show with Charlie McCarthy and Mortimer Snerd. There have been puppets in radio.
Sure. Well, and because radio is such a flexible medium in that it's operating in the mind's eye. Okay, so yes, anything can happen there. And you could have puppets in the radio. Why not?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
But what I'm wanting, what I want people to feel when they read this book, and, you know, hopefully people who come this evening when they hear me read, is to be taken into that other world, mm-hmm. is to be feeling, you know, the sensations of that world, and the grit and the cold and the perfume and, you know, the feel of somebody warm sitting on your lap and, you know, all those things, and the feel of there is my great love that I haven't seen and now I do see him.
Yeah.
You know, oh, yeah. Know, that is what I want.
And there is a history of that in certain fantasy literature, not always handled perfectly well. Jack Finney tried to do it, and, you know, the Circus of Dr. Lao, or that's usually a carny setting, and that, of course, also immediately conjures up a certain kind of horror. People are scared of clowns. Clowns are creepy.
Right.
But this is a very different setting that's exploring truth in the same way as some of those carny stories attempt.
Or kind of wear the mask of truth. And yeah. It's also worth pointing out that the second half of the book, our heroes leave the brothel entirely. Again, this is not a spoiler. But they leave and they go out into the world, and there is a world of even greater artifice and more hypocrisy and more danger once they get into this sort of high society milieu where people are constantly lying. And the theater there is the theater of gain and the theater of control and the theater of who gets to do what to whom and who gets to set those limits. Now it's not just about these people in this sort of small, you know, second-tier brothel in a small town. Now it is this political stage.
Yeah. And fictionally, it works great because you start in a confined area that reaches out everywhere. And now that your mind has reached out from that confined area, you go to a place
to that a larger is arena
large and see what you were dealing with in the first part.
Right, and that the people that you have met in this first half of the book, you get to see them in that milieu with which they are very familiar, and, you know, our guys are not. That is not, and one thing I wanted to do very much was, because sometimes when you have those kinds of stories where it's like, we were in this small world, and now we're in the larger world, they really don't give a damn. They don't really want to be part of the larger world. They don't want to become politically active. They don't want to start taking over the world. They want to do what they've always done, and that is be together and make theater.
Sounds like me.
Because I get so tired. I don't believe that that's true. I mean, certainly there are people who react to whatever milieu it is by saying, oh, I want a piece of this, I want to be part of this. But I think, you know, that has nothing to do with them or what they want or desire. And what they want or desire is to be together and, you know, to live out their own creative tensions in their own way. That has nothing to do with, like, who's in charge of Brussels.
Right. And that works for me so wonderfully. And it's expressive to me. It really is. A little cubbyhole that I have had at Hour of the Wolf, which is now moving to a different hour. But it's very much exactly what I wanted in that little creative place. And I don't care who rules Brussels. I really don't.
I
just want my time slot in which I can reach out and talk to people and do things.
Because, P.S., that's also the way you do rule Brussels. Is by speaking in that creative way, which actually is known by all tyrants everywhere through every era of history.
Successful tyrants.
Successful tyrants. And even not so successful, the first thing you try to do is control the organs of information, and you control the organs of humor and satire. It's decided who can make fun of whom. You cannot make fun of the government, because the government knows that is powerful, okay? Because all power knows that laughter and mockery is it pulls the rug out from under you, and it's a very dangerous thing. So what our guys are doing is also very dangerous when they are continuing to be who they are in this situation that allows no room for that.
So we are virtually out of time. Nevertheless, the best question is, what's next?
Next is a theater piece. Next is a theater piece, and trying to bring this to fruition in the 3D world, what we've accomplished on the page.
Where? Of course, as a New Yorker, to me, if it's theater, it's off-Broadway, off-Broadway. I've done that.
Well, theater is an expensive medium.
Very.
Very expensive medium, and we are wanting to premiere in Detroit because that is where I am from, that is where I live. I want to do things where I live because that's where I want them to be, because I'm lazy and I want them to be where I am.
Right.
And that is where we are hoping
and
to premiere.
And there's pride involved, so.
And because, so and my collaborator, Diane Chuklich, who's a filmmaker and film, is also part of the Under the Poppy on stage experience as well. Because we are both Detroiters, that is where we would like to do it. Mm-hmm. We would also like to take it everywhere, everywhere that has an appetite for what we can do. The sky's the limit, so perhaps we will see you off Broadway.
I certainly hope.
It's because of you there's a giant in our midst, and my wife is dead.
But it isn't my fault. I was given those beans. You persuaded me to trade away my cow for beans, and without those beans, there'd have been no stalk to get up to the giants in the first place.
Wait a minute, magic beans for a cow so old that you had to tell a lie to sell it, which you told. Were they worthless beans? Were they oversold? Oh, and tell us who persuaded you to steal that gold.
See, it's your fault.
No.
So it's your fault.
No.
Yes, it is.
It's not.
It's true.
Wait a minute, but I only stole the gold to get my cow back from you.
So it's your fault.
Yes.
No, it isn't. I'd have kept those beans, but our house was cursed. She made us get a cow to get the curse reversed.
It's your father's fault that the curse got placed and the place got cursed in the first place.
Oh, then it's his fault.
It was his fault.
No. Yes, it is. It's his.
I guess.
Wait a minute, though. I chopped up the beanstalk, right? That's clear. But without any beanstalk, then what's queer is how did the second giant get down here in the first place? Second place.
Yeah, how?
Well, who had the other bean?
The other bean.
The other bean.
You pocketed the other bean.
I didn't. Yes, I did.
So it's yours.
No, it isn't, because I gave it to my wife.
So it's hers.
No, it isn't.
Then what is it?
Wait a minute. She exchanged that bean to obtain your shoe. So the one who knows what happened to the bean is you.
You mean that old bean that your wife? Oh dear, but I never knew, and so I did. Well, don't look here. So it's your fault.
Honey. See, it's her fault.
But
and it isn't mine at all.
But what?
Well, if you hadn't gone back up again.
We were needy.
You were greedy. Did you need that hair?
But I got it from my mother.
So it's her fault then.
Yes, but what about the harp in the third place?
The harp, yes. What, you dared me to?
I dared you to?
You dared me to. She said that I was scared to. She dared me.
No, I
so it's your fault.
Wait a minute.
You hadn't dared him to.
And you had left the harp alone. You wouldn't
hadn't thrown away
in the first place.
In the first place. She hadn't thrown
yes,
in the first
she hadn't raised it
in the first place.
Place.
In the first place.
It's your fault.
You're responsible. You're the one to blame. It's your fault.
Get your prince, had to get your cow, have to get your wish, doesn't matter how, anyway it doesn't matter now. It's the last midnight, it's the boom splat, nothing but a last midnight, everybody smashed flat. Nothing we can do, not exactly true, we can always give her the boy. No, no, of course what really matters is the blame. Somebody to blame. Fine, if that's the thing you enjoy, placing the blame. If that's the aim, give me the blame. Just give me the boy.
No!
No. You're so nice. You're not good, you're not bad, you're just nice. I'm not good, I'm not nice, I'm just right. I'm the witch, you're the world. I'm the hitch, I'm what no one believes. I'm the witch, you're all liars and thieves. Like his father, like his son will be too. Oh, why bother? You'll just do what you do as the at you fast midnight. Soon you'll see the sky fall. Here you want a bean, have another bean. Beans were made for making you rich. Pluck them and they soar. Hear you want some more. Listen to the roar, giants by the score. Or you can blame another witch. It's the last midnight. It's the last verse. Now before it's past midnight, I'm leaving you my last curse. I'm leaving you alone. You can tend the garden, it's yours, separate and alone. Everybody down on all fours. All right, mother, when lost the beans again, punish me the way you did then. Give me claws and a hunt, just away from this bunch. And the gloom, and the doom, and the boom.
And your tuned listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio in New York City, WBAI at 99.5 FM. And that was Bernadette Peters, Chip Zien, Z-I-E-N, Joanna Gleason. No, she's already dead by that point. She's the butcher's wife, so she's dead. Well, the cast, the original Broadway cast of Stephen Sondheim's Into the Woods. And by the way, if you care to learn more of what Kathy Koja was talking about, well, you can visit her website. Now, Kathy Koja is spelt not the way you might expect, if you don't know. It is K-A-T-H-E-K-O-J-A. Or go to underthepoppy.com. So either KathyKoja.com or underthepoppy.com specifically to deal with that book. And that will give you all the information you need. Let's see. I've got your schedule all laid out for next week, okay? I'll tell you what you need to do pretty much every day. Well, Monday afternoon at 2 o'clock, I will be on the air from 2 to 3 with Cat Radio Cafe. And I'm not, I haven't set in stone. Hell, I haven't set in clay or anything yet. What will be on there? Probably our friend John Ordover, who proprietor of the Soho Gallery for Digital Art. He is putting together an animation competition, which actually sounds like a ton of fun. And I believe I will have him on to talk about that. But it's a one-hour arts magazine. I'm still figuring out the other components. Then, so that's your Monday. Tuesday evening. Well, the Soho Gallery for Digital Art. I will be holding court? No, I will be holding event there. The New York Review of Science Fiction Readings. Our readers will be Gregory Frost and Michael Swanwick. The doors open at 6:30 at 138 Sullivan Street. Admission is free. Donations accepted. Be there. So let's see. That's Tuesday. Wednesday night. Thursday morning. 1:30 a.m. Tune in here. Our guest will be Lawrence Watt Evans, and we'll read for you and take phone calls. Then Thursday, June 9th at 6 o'clock, Books of Wonder, 18 West 18th Street. Welcome to Bordertown. Okay, Bordertown was one of my favorite series of books. There was at one time a very, very popular concept called the shared universe. By the way, if people want to call up and talk on the air, you're invited to do so, 212-209-2900, after I make these announcements. Okay, so Bordertown. Shared universes were where you would create a place, a story, a set of rules, or whatever, and other people would write into that. So Terry Windling, the wonderful Terry Windling, created this Bordertown series, 20 years ago. And there were about three novels and maybe 20 or 30 short stories amongst a series of books. There was a map book. There was artwork. A lot of the characters involved were runaways. At that time, it would have been called a normal book. Hey, listener, long see no time.
Hey, welcome back.
Good morrow. Thank you. Likewise, I'm Shoah. So there's a new book out. There's a new Border Town book. It is called Welcome to Border Town. Ellen Kushner and Holly Black are the editors this time out. The writers in here, everybody's in it. Neil Gaiman's in it. Everybody's in it. And at Books of Wonder, Holly Black and Ellen Kushner will be hosting Cory Doctorow, Aliyah Dawn Johnson, Annette Curtis Klaus, and Holly and Ellen and Delia Sherman will also be reading or doing a thing. At least they'll be signing the books. That's the point. Okay, so that's your Thursday. Friday, you can do what you want. Saturday, June 11th at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Ellen Datlow is having, similarly, I call these gangbang readings. When I produce a reading like the one I'll do Tuesday, I just have, like, you know, two people, so you get complete stories or denouements. When Ellen Kushner, Ellen Datlow, anybody named Ellen, when the Ellens produce their events, they have star-studded, like, you know, 8 or 9 people. Each one gets to read a sentence from their story, and that's about it. That's not quite fair. But on the other hand, you get to see all these amazing people. And one of Ellen Datlow's new books is this wonderful young adult vampire collection called Teeth. And there will be Steve Berman, the aforementioned Holly Black, Jeffrey Ford, again, Delia Sherman, Genevieve Valentine. Oh, she hasn't been on this show in like 3 weeks. And so forth. Ah, books will not be sold at the event. So what Ellen Datlow is saying is, you know, buy your copy at Books of Wonder, right? You know, when you show up for the Border Town event, but also buy a copy of Teeth by Ellen Datlow. And then you can get it autographed by all these people there. And let's see now, where is that? Oh, that's at the Jefferson Market Library. 425 Avenue of the Americas at 10th Street, Saturday, June 11th. I'll repeat the things, you know, some of those things next week. But, you know, there, I think we've got most of your week laid out. So that starts with, you know, tune in Monday, tune in Tuesday. No. Come to my reading on Tuesday at the Soho Gallery. And then Wednesday, when I'm back on the air, I'll tell you all about these other things. Okay, so you know, you don't even need to put these in your calendar. I'll tell you all about them. Just, you know, make such footnotes. This is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. We've got about 10 minutes left before Burn Baby Burn Clappers will come winging your way with wonderful sounds now that we are finally done with the fundraising portion of our festivities. We can take phone calls here about science fiction, fantasy, and related fields of endeavor at 212-209-2900. And good morning. You're on the radio.
Good morning, James.
Good morning, Robert.
Into the Woods. What a lovely phrase. Have you ever read any of the books of 1K Stone?
No.
She's a Canadian folklorist. She has two books where she really goes into the Into the Woods tradition. Burning Brightly, and Someday My Witch Will Come.
Okay.
You like that? Yes.
Yeah, that's cute.
That's really a book about the history of Disney, but she that's only her starting point, believe me. they've received top billing, top ratings in the Canadian storytelling circle and even in the States. Your wonderful interview with Kathy Koja, this is a book that sounds absolutely wonderful. Victorian Brothel. Anyway, she mentioned illusion. And I don't know why, but I thought of a line in one of the classic Trek episodes, The Menagerie, when the Talosian says to Kirk, "May your way be as pleasant." And illusion, what is illusion? And I also have to recommend, by the way, I have read The Puppets in World History. It's a marvelous book. I don't know if you've read it yet.
No.
Eileen Blumenthal. It is fantastic. It really goes into puppets in all manner of settings, not just, it isn't really chronological, as she says, it's by subject. There's a book that's coming out this summer that you may be interested in because you like darker versions of things. Penguin Books in England, which has done all kinds of wonderful stuff, is coming out with a mammoth volume called Dark, Dark, Dark. And what they're attempting to do is to research the darkest versions of approximately 30 to 40 folk tales.
Ah, interesting.
And they are some of which may be the Grimm, although I will tell you.
You can't get much darker than the Germanic.
Absolutely.
Folk tales. I grew up, of course, with
Struwwelpeter, Peter, yes.
Well, Struwwelpeter, to call it properly.
Yes. Well, try to wrap your tongue around that. Well, you know.
Well, I grew up with it,
yes,
so
that's true.
It's.
No, you're right. But in this particular case, they really go, for example, into some of the non-European versions of Grimm. And I'm telling you, the further, I'm not saying this as a generality, but the further east you go, I mean, although I have to say this, having read Deathless, which I think is one of the best books of the year, absolutely, it is just mind breathtaking. But this is going to be a book of really dark versions. And one other thing, you mentioned the original Pinocchio, very, very dark.
Oh yeah, absolutely. We did, as mentioned, we did a production of it here at BAI.
Oh, you did?
Yes, we did.
I missed it. I'm sorry. It's there's a wonderful recount.
We did it live at the Public Theater, as a matter of fact.
Ah, okay. Well, it sounds interesting. I'm sure it was wonderful. Maybe someday it'll happen again. Anyway, I'm sure I will run into you at one of next week's events, Books of Wonder, or I'm glad. By the way, one very last thing. One of the best shared universes, and Bordertown is one of them, one of the better shared universes, it was one that Jane Yolen did called Leavec.
Yes.
And she did about five of them.
Yeah.
And it
But who else wrote into that, though?
Well, she and a whole bunch of writers.
Oh, okay.
I mean, she basically...
Yeah, I don't remember who else was in that. But.
You know, there were a number. I think Midori Snyder did some. I mean, these have been long. I mean, I think they.
Well, the whole concept of shared universes has sort of moved away.
Really?
And well, yeah. I mean, I can't name too many.
No, that's true. I mean,
they really stopped quite a few years ago. One of the biggest problems with Bordertown, I have not heard this, but I am aware that there were tusslings over ownership.
Really?
And that can be a real problem with collaborative efforts. And what happens if somebody takes such a shared universe concept and, let's say, wants to make a TV series out of it?
Oh.
Now, who developed what ideas, who developed which characters, it gets messy. George Martin used to be involved in a number of shared universes before he, before Game of Thrones, of course.
Just a general question, don't the authors of the stories own their own material?
Well, the universe.
Oh, the universe.
Remember, you know, you're talking about a shared universe. So if you're doing a story and you own your own material, but somebody passes a library, okay, and somebody else says, wait a minute, that library only appeared in my story. It didn't appear in the story by that creator.
Ooh.
Right?
Mm.
How do you, it's a shared, you know, many, it's a huge collaboration with as many as 20 or 30 people.
Well.
Rights are not that simple.
So you don't really think there's been a good shared universe since Bordertown? I'm trying to.
Well, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that that there hasn't been, much of any. Period. Name one.
By the way, by a shared universe, you don't mean just a collection of stories based on a theme like alternate history.
No.
Oh, okay.
Shared universes are actual productions. They are they're created by one or two or three people, and then a series of books come out into which people are writing set in that universe with common characters, common places, common theme. The premise of Bordertown. Bordertown is this place where you go and magic. It's the borderland between Elfland and the human world.
Yes, it's on the border of what Dunsany used to call Beyond the Fields We Know.
Fairy is what it's called.
Yeah.
And, I'm not talking broadly. I'm talking about Bordertown. About a series of books here.
Yeah.
It takes place halfway between Fairy and the human world, which isn't given a name in there. And where science works, but not always, where magic works, but not always, things fall apart. So this premise, this idea, when one person says, okay, we're going to hold an event in this rock club in one story, well then, a year later, somebody else writes a story set in that same rock club. That's a shared universe.
Yeah, I can see the difficulty.
Yeah.
Okay. Sounds like a very full week next week. I guess I'll run into you somewhere.
I hope so. Take care then. Telephone number here is 212-209-2900. And by the way, speaking of Bordertown, and welcome to Bordertown, all that, go on YouTube and look up Welcome to Bordertown. There is what they call a book trailer. It's like a commercial, but for a book. And there's this 2-minute thing. It's done as a little news documentary. And outside of the news reporter, who is more or less the lead of the piece itself, there is a whole bunch of runaway kids, or kids who talk about wanting to run away, so that they can all go to Bordertown. And then there's this one adult, been there, done that, don't go. Yeah, that would be me. It's my first and probably only ever on camera, at least fictional on camera appearance. So if you go to YouTube and you type in Welcome to Bordertown, yeah, you'll see me. Okay, so let me see. Limited time left. Actually, only a couple of minutes. So what I should probably do is start laying the groundwork to... finish the show and move on. Okay, so let me reiterate at least a few things. Number one, I will be back here on Monday at 2 p.m. for Cat Radio Cafe, which I will be hosting. Then on Tuesday, I will be hosting and producing the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings at the Soho Gallery for Digital Art, 138 Sullivan Street. Michael Swanwick and Gregory Frost will be the readers. Trust me, this is going to be fun. These are two fine writers, good readers, nifty people. If you do know them, then you already know why you want to go. If you don't know them, then you are in for a treat, okay? So that's this coming Tuesday. Doors open at 6:30, 138 Sullivan Street. Okay, now everybody's calling. Well, I'm sorry, but, we're pretty much out of time. So I should have called earlier. And let's see, what else? Yeah, that'll do. And then tune in, of course, next week. At 1:30 in the morning for the next edition of Hour of the Wolf. Our guest will be Lawrence Watt Evans. So, well, what can I say other than it's been a pleasure to be here? I hope that it's been a pleasure for you to listen. That is sort of the idea. And visit the website, ourwolf.com, HOURWOLF. You want to see what a 1990s website looks like, but the information in it is still good. Or follow me on Twitter, Jim Freund, JIMFREUND. Find me on Facebook, all those weird things. So stay tuned for Burn Baby Burn Clappers. and enjoy the... whoops, why am I playing the intro? Oh, I can't do a blessed thing right. Okay, I should have been playing my outro, of course. Hold on. I was so pleased I had it set properly. Oh, well. Gonna run about 20 seconds over, Lister. Sorry. Okay, thank you. He's always wonderful about that. So, we go out with Sails of Silver from Steel Eye Span. And again, have a wonderful week. Take care.
Alec Baldwin. You're tuned to WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York.
Anything can happen.
Support WBAI, Peace and Justice Radio in New York.
Treat yourself to an ear massage, 5 to 6 a.m. this Sunday morning. I'm Mark Leosa, your ear masseur, stimulating and sedating you with music, sound, spoken word, and the bird of the week. Ear massages for clubbers coming in, birders going out, and pillow cuddlers. Ear massage this Sunday morning, 5 to 6 a.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM. Ear massage. Enjoy.
Hallelujah. Barry, our prayers have been answered.
Prayers? Parnell, we don't pray.
Okay, good point. But still, after nearly 10 years of waiting, Equal Time for Free Thought is getting a full hour, so we'll really be able to do our thing.
Well, yes, if by our paying you mean a full hour for the unique way we approach the big questions of life. the way we examine the underlying beliefs which influence religion and society, and the way we advocate a naturalistic approach to meeting human needs.
Exactly. Could anything be better?
Well, if we had a new time.
Barry, it's a miracle. Our new time is Saturday afternoons from 3 to 4.
Oh, that's not a miracle. It's just an excellent decision from BAI management.
Basically, a miracle.
Yeah, I guess.
So don't forget to tune in to the miraculously expanded Equal Time for Free Thought on Saturday afternoons from 3 to 4. And to meet other freethinkers in person, check out the Experimental Zone at meetup.com. So tune in, pay it forward, and question everything.
Unite the people. Craig is on fire. Craig is on fire. Craig is on fire with a burning desire. Craig is on fire. Craig is on fire. Craig is on burning love. Craig is on fire. Craig is on fire. Craig is on fire with a burning desire. Big as a fire, big as a fire, big as a burning love.
Can't stop for this a time, reggae music just arrived. To satisfy the people themselves, getting stronger than before. People crying out for more, more and more. Give the youth the natural vibes, keep the people them alive. In this time, people dancing in the street, showing each other how to do it. Oh, you see?
Big as a fire, big as a fire, big as a fire, big as a fire, big as a burning love. Big as a fire, big as a fire, big as a fire with a burning desire. Big as a fire, big as a fire, big as a burning love.
This music from the heart, taking over all the charts, round the world, and teach the people to unite. Leg of the fuss and leg of the fire, let's get it right tonight. Ain't no many innocent have to drop before the sturdy bark will start. Scooting, we got the fire, the fire, the fire from the burning place.
Oh, music is gonna get you. Music is for the people. Music done by the rebel. Music unites the people. Music is gonna get you. Music is for the people. Music done by the rebel. Music unites the people. Break as a fire, break as a fire, break as a fire with a burning desire. Break as a fire, break as a fire, break as a burning love. Break as a fire, break as a fire, break as a fire with a burning desire. Break as a fire, break as a fire, break as a burning love.
Oh, mama, 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 yeah. Can't stop for this a time. Reggae music just arrived. To satisfy the people themselves. Getting stronger than before.
And you're in tune to radio station WBI 99.5 FM, WBI.org. Listen live right here, clappers, burn, baby, burn. You know what we do best right here, burn the American flag to ashes before 5 o'clock, before Al Jazeera. This show is dedicated to a personal, dear, close friend of mine. You might not know this, Gil Scott Heron.
BAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York.
Anything can happen.
Support WBAI, Peace and Justice Radio in New York.
Again, the show is dedicated to Gil Scott Heron.
Gil Scott Heron, unknown bluesologist.
Miss you.
Speaking to you on Free Speech Radio, WBAI 99.5 on your radio dial.
Broke my
Stay
heart.
Here.
Broke my heart.
People, get ready, because I'm coming on strong.
Broke my heart big time to know that Gil dropped out. It's really sad.
People's station.
Right
out of system.
Burn it.
I don't know about you, but give me a call here at 631. That's in Stony Brook, 212-209-2900. Really broke my heart big time. To learn that Gil dropped.
This is gonna be a blues number.
Next week,
well, first I want to do a little bit of background.
Larry MacDonald to sit in on the show with us right here. He played with Gil for a while, you know.
Like, there are six cardinal colors, and colors have always come to signify more than simply that particular shade.
This is
like
too close redneck to talk about, but
or
I'm
got
trying
the blues.
I'm trying.
That's Mr. where you Gil apply colors to something else, you know, to come up with what it is you're trying to say.
Miss you, Gil. Miss you big time.
So there are six cardinal colors: yellow, red, orange, green, blue, and purple. And there are 3,000 shades. And if you take these 3,000 shades and divide them by six, you'll come up with 500. Meaning there are at least 500 shades of the blues.
For example,
there's the I Ain't Got Me No Money blues.
I'd like to dedicate this to Gil Scott Heron's brother.
I Ain't Got Me No Woman blues.
Right here in New York City, WBI.
There's the I Ain't Got Me No Money and I Ain't Got Me No Woman, which is the double blues. And for years it was thought that black people was the only one who could get the blues, so the blues hadn't come into no international type of fame. But lately we done had Frank Rizzo with the lie detector blues. We done had the United States government talking about the energy crisis blues. And we're gonna dedicate this next poem here to Spearhead X, the X second in command in terms of this country. And the poem is called H2O GATE Blues. And if H2O is still water,
here we
and
go.
GATE
here
is
we
still
go.
Gate, mm-hmm. What we're getting ready to deal on is the Watergate Blues.
Yes. And this is about His Imperial Majesty the First, Barack.
Let me
Obama.
See if I can dial this number right quick.
Click, click, click,
click. Click. Woo! I'm sorry. The government you have elected is inoperative. Click. Inoperative. Just how blind will America be? The world is on the edge of its seat, defeat on the horizon. Very surprising that we all could see the plot and still could not. Let me do that part again. Just how blind will America be? The world is on the edge of its seat, defeat on the horizon. Very surprising that we all could see the plot and claimed that we could not. Just how blind, America? Just as Vietnam exploded in the rice, snap, crackle, and pop could not stop people determined to be free. Just how blind will America be?
People, get ready!
The shock of a Vietnam defeat sent Republican donkeys scurrying down on Wall Street. And when the roll was called, it was Pepsi Cola and Phillips 66. Boeing, Dow, and Lockheed. Ask them what they're fighting for, and they'll never mention the economics of war. Ecological warfare, above all else, destroy the land. If we can't break the Asian will, we'll bomb the dikes and starve the man. America, the international Jekyll and Hyde, the land of a thousand disguises, sneaks up on you but rarely surprises, plundering the Asian countryside in the name of Fu Manchu. Afraid of shoeless, undernourished Cambodians, while we strike big wheat bargains with Russia, our nuclear enemy. Just how blind, America? But tell me, who was around where Hale Boggs died? And what was the cause of LBJ's untimely demise? And what really happened to J. Edgar Hoover? The king is proud of Patrick Gray, while America's faith is drowning beneath that cesspool, Watergate. How long will the citizens sit and wait? It's looking like Europe in 38. Did they move to stop Hitler before it was too late? How long, America, before the consequences of keeping the school system segregated, allowing the press to be intimidated, watching the price of everything soar, and hearing complaints because the rich want more? It seems that Macbeth and not his lady went mad. We've let him eliminate the whole middle class. The dollar's the only thing we can't inflate, while the poor go on without a new minimum wage. But what really happened to J. Edgar Hoover? The king is proud of Patrick Gray. And there are those who say America's faith is drowning beneath that cesspool, Watergate. How much more evidence do the citizens need that the election was sabotaged by trickery and greed? And if this is so, and who we got didn't win, let's do the whole goddamn election over again. The obvious key to the whole charade would be to run down all of the games they played. Remember Dieter Beard and ITT, the slaughter of Attica, the CIA in Chile, knowing nothing about Allende, at this time in the past, as I recollect, Augusta, Georgia, the nomination of Supreme Court Justice to head off the tapes, William Calley's executive interference in the image of John Wayne, Kent State, Jackson State, Southern Louisiana, hundreds of authorized bombing raids, the chaining and gagging of Bobby Seale. Somebody tell these Maryland governors to be for real. And we recall all of these events just to prove that Whataburgers in the Watergate wasn't no news. The thing that seems to justify all of our fears is that all this went down in the last 5 years. But tell me, what really happened to J. Edgar Hoover? The king is proud of Patrick Gray while America's faith is drowning beneath that cesspool, Watergate. We leave America to ponder the image of justice from its new wave of leaders. Frank Rizzo, the high school graduate mayor of Philadelphia whose ignorance is surpassed only by those who voted for him. Richard Daley, imperial Napoleonic mayor of Chicago, who took over from Al Capone and continues to implement the same tactics. George Wallace, Lester Maddow, Strom Thurmond, Ronald Reagan, an almost endless list that won't be missed when at last America is purged. And the silent White House with the James brothers once in command. But see the sauerkraut mafia men deserting the sinking White House ship and their main mindless megalomaniac Ahab. McCord has blown, Mitchell has blown, no tap on my telephone. McCord has blown, Mitchell has blown, no tap on my telephone. Haldeman, Ehrlichman, Mitchell, and Dean, it follows a pattern if you dig what I mean. Haldeman, Ehrlichman, Mitchell, and Dean, it follows a pattern if you dig what I mean. And what are we left with now? Bumper stickers that say Free the Watergate 500. Spy movies of the same name with a cast of thousands. And that ominous phrase that if Nixon knew, Ag knew. But Ag didn't knew enough to stay out of jail. And what really happened to J. Edgar Hoover? The king is proud of Patrick Gray. And there are those who swear they've seen King Richard. King Richard.
King Luke.
King Richard. King Richard.
Yeah.
King Richard.
Yeah.
King Richard. King Richard. King Richard. King Richard.
King Nukla.
Beneath that cesspool.
Damn.
Watergate.
Dedicating that to Gil Scott Heron's brother and Mr. Montgomery, who we're gonna have to get together at Mount Sinai in hospital today for you.
Saturday, June 4th, come to a support rally for Bradley Manning, hero whistleblower, who has been jailed for 1 year, tortured at Quantico Prison, and transferred to Fort Leavenworth, awaiting military court-martial. Our demand is to free Bradley, because blowing the whistle on war crimes is not a crime. Saturday, June 4th, Times Square Recruitment Center at 12:30, 44th and Broadway. For more information, visit worldcantwait.net or call 866-973-4463. That's 866-973-4463.
Bradley Manning, Lister's hero right here. Burn, baby, burn, where we burn the American red, white, and blue flag to ashes before 5 o'clock right here in 99 Cinco. Dedicating this to all of you who support 99.5. Lister Live, ready, aim, fire.
Ready. Fire tree, squeeze the trigger, easy fire four. Shoot and get shot, ready, aim, fire. Ready, aim, fire. You see that target? You better mark it. You see that object? You better hit it. Ready, aim, fire. Ready, aim, fire. Practice and discipline is the ultimate law. The longevity, wisdom, and
and prosperity. Practicing discipline is the ultimate law for longevity, wisdom, and prosperity. You better get ready. Aim, fire. Ready. Aim, fire. Fire one, steady your hand. Fire two, take up with you. Fire three, squeeze the trigger easy. Fire four, shoot when you're sure. Ready. Aim, fire. Ready. Aim, fire. Hey, 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 hey. Results is better than self-insults, Lord. Only your wits can give you direct hits. Constructive results is better than self-insults, Lord. Only your wits can give you direct hits. You better get ready. Aim, fire. Ready. Take a review, fire three. Squeeze the trigger easy, fire four. Shoot when you're sure. Ready.
Get ready, cause I'm fire. Coming on.
Now I would like to hear. Excuse me. Could you put the music down for me, Mr. Music Man? Thank you, thank you. Right about now, I'm going to ask everyone to participate. To get together with Pablo Moses and the Revolutionary Dream Band. And all you gotta do is sing these few lines. Easy. Listen good. You're gonna say, ready, aim, fire. Just like I sing it. Ready, aim, fire. Come on, let me hear you now. Come on, Perry! One more time, come on! One more time!
Revolutionary Dream Band.
Right here, thank you very much, Pablo Moses, dedicating the show to the liberty of the great Gil Scott Heron, reggae icon here, man who had great revolutionary influence over the lyrics of reggae music. Bet you didn't know that. Got a lot of stories to tell you about that. Gil Scott Heron and Larry Mack got together and wrote a reggae tune. We're gonna play that before we burn. Baby Burn, a big head fat split. In about 35 minutes from now, 30 minutes after 3 o'clock right here, Don DeBar on the case. We go to London, England to find out what's happening on the David Katz tip and J.A. You know it already.
¿A dónde mirarán? Tanto satélite, ¿dónde coño se lo pondrán?
Life on Buenos Aires, the land of Che Guevara, right here at 99 Cinco. So we do it more time. So we do it more time right here at 99 Cinco. Yes. Yes, so we do it. This is Los Cafres on Burn Baby Burn, List Alive. Dodoy, 99 Cinco. Tell a friend, yeah, to support 99 Cinco right here. The militant canary at the end of the tunnel. Yeah, so we do it, Burn Baby Burn style. Listen to this.
Enciende la llama que busca la vida. Enciende la llama que busca la vida. Enciende la llama sin semilla. Enciende la llama que abra mucho tu corazón de besa. El que a muchos se le olvidó es que tanto pensar. Nadie para mirar y nadie. Te digo que la vida es otra cosa mucho más. Uno es lo primero que debe cambiar. Difícil, no lo niego, pero basta de hablar. Que abriría las puertas del cielo y mucho más. Pero no, no sirve si no está la llama, no. 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 No sirve si no está la llama, no.
veces no estará ya bolú. De tu amor, wow, 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 wow. Dulce sin semilla, oh, 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 oh. Enciéndela, enciende la llama sin semilla, enciende la llama que busca la vida, enciende la llama sin semilla, enciende la llama que abra mucho tu corazón, debes saber que a muchos se le olvidó, es que tanto pensar de acá para allá, nadie para mirar y nadie para escuchar, te digo que la vida es otra cosa mucho más y uno es lo primero que debe cambiar. Difícil, no lo niego, pero basta de hablar. Te abriría las puertas del cielo y mucho más. Pero no, siempre se no estará llamando. Que tu amor, no siempre se no estará llamando. No siempre se no estará llamando. No siempre se no estará llamando. De tu amor, wow, 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 dulce sin semilla, rica cancha. Semilla, rica cancha. Muchas gracias, gente. ¿Cómo se siente? ¿Cómo se siente?
Thank you.
List alive right here, burning American imperialist flag to ashes before 5 o'clock right here. 38 minutes after 3 o'clock, 79 degrees. In New York City. So wicked we had to name it twice. New York, New York, yeah. Sing it, HR, sing it. Burn, baby, burn, HR, burn. Yeah, 5 o'clock shadow this afternoon on your favorite radio station, 99 Cinco, list alive right here, WBAI Pacifica Radio at its very best, just because we're what? Militant. I missed you so much, I gotta play this because you had a big tight hold on me. Listen here, 99 Cinco. 212-209-2900, burn baby burn clappers, so we do it, yeah. So we do it, yeah. Tell me something I should know. 212-209-2900.
Egyptian, tell them for Guan, eviction. This one, yeah, it's had a bud gal edition. See them gal that? Contradiction. Them say them sitting tight, a bare fiction. The whole of them a beat. Body smoking, cigarette. Shit nice, figure it. Get them the rollerblades, tell them to ski it. Stay out on them, Jamaican tip. All I do is sign boobs and be taking pics. Got the new bins, the color of a bathing pit. Got a spot in every state, Dalmatian bitch. Got this young money, old money, real good money. Ain't do a feature that wasn't on Billboard, honey. Kingston, Remo, Waterhouse, Jungle, Barbie, my Abnuff gal in a bungle.
Y'all be y'all, you give me the tightest grip me ever did see in my life.
Get ready.
Y'all be done swapping one, y'all. But me think all around, y'all. Y'all, you give me the tightest hold me ever did see in my life.
Get ready.
Like the first bike on the boy, room, 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 room. Y'all for the back and chair, boom, 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 boom. Give me my one night, the fat to the cum, cum. But the rappers, the guys, me, I get my boom, boom. See him, they want that damn tune. I move for her, she want it, I'm sure. She's a boyfriend, no rats, then she grown as baby Monty, but it will get me what for you,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You give me the tightest hold me ever get seen in my life. Yeah, me just what for you, yeah. Put me arms right around, yeah. Yeah, you give me the tightest hold me ever get seen in my life.
Cause I'm coming on strong.
Like a fast bike, man, the road, room, 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 room. Y'all funny, back at the boom, boom. The man I wonder if I go boom. But around one time I move to watch my phone. See the mood of control. I don't know if I she wants in her soul. As it's a more fun, more fun, still she grown. I still be running by the mood of me walking wall, yeah. Put me things out around, yeah. Y'all don't give me the tightest hold me ever get seen in my life. Y'all need to swap me wall, yeah. Put me arms right around, yeah. Y'all don't give me the tightest hold me my life. Yeah, me one finger squeeze, yo. Put me thing right around, yo. Yeah, you give me the tightest hold me ever seen in my life. Oh, behind them dry and me no care. Me take it anytime, anywhere. Me not a square, so me no care. Long as a woman, I will be there. Me want a girl when they take care of me. Me want a girl like a wife for me.
Love that tune, yeah. Love that tune, yeah. That tune, yeah, squeeze me. Tighter, baby, tighter.
Uh-huh.
77 degrees on the outside, 99 single, list alive until 5 o'clock. Al Jazeera live. Al Jazeera English kicks it right here until 6 o'clock when Esther comes in with a brand new wake up call just for you. On the dock, Punta Eseguida. Yeah, Egyptian. Egyptian right here. We got this little musical request from Nippon. Some Peter Tosh, yeah.
Give me a ticket for an aeroplane. Ain't got no time for the fast.
We're gonna play all of Gil Scott Heron's favorite reggae artists right here. Kicking it off with Peter Tosh, yeah.
Back to my baby. Back to my
place. After she wrote me a letter saying she couldn't resist without me anymore. Ooh, yeah. Listen, Mr. Gay, got to get back to my baby. Ooh, yeah. Don't care how much money I got to spend, I got to get back to my baby.
Mr. Plays, Gil Scott Heron's favorite reggae artist in the world. Y'all listen.
No, no. Thank you.